welcome. Here we are, Cinema Squabble, episode number 32. I am Adam Gerke, Brian Zitzelman, Sarah Hello. Michelle Fetters, all joining you here. And what are we? Who are we? What do we do? We are a group of Seattle's film critics. And specifically, we gather in theaters several times throughout the week and we discuss films. And now we bring that discussion to you in podcast form.
Podcast form.
So you can hear exactly what we do.
Just the bare necessities.
So lots to get to tonight. And we'll get to specifically the bare necessities in a matter of...
Rest at ease, people.
Yeah, a matter of minutes. But let's start this off with something that it opened last week. It's the latest from Richard Linklater, and that's Everybody Wants Some. Brian, set this up for us.
So Everybody Wants Some is the quote-unquote spiritual sequel successor to Richard Linklater's Dazed and Confused, which was sort of his breakout, sort of not. There was Slacker beforehand, but Dazed and Confused kind of got him on the map for people who are outside the indie scene, and that's the famous... set at the end of the 1970s high school movie, a bunch of kids hanging out, freshmen, seniors, hazing stuff. This is set same time period, a year later, dawn of the 80s in Texas, which is actually something Richard Linklater himself grew up in. He was from Texas. He played college baseball. And this is, instead of a bunch of high schoolers running rampant and going to parties, it's a bunch of college kids running around going to parties. You got your seniors who have their own ways. You got your freshmen. Particularly a actor whose name I'm forgetting already. What's that guy's name?
You mean Jake, our lead?
Jake, our lead, Mr. Jenner, who is the star of The Glee Project, which is something I happily watched. It's better than Glee. It was a reality show that found new actors, and now he has found himself in a new Richard Linklater movie with Kurt Russell's son, Leah Thompson's daughter, and all sorts of other could-be big names because Dazed and Confused, of course, launched... or helped launch Ben Affleck, Parker Posey, Joey Lauren Adams, a host of other people.
Matthew McConaughey.
All right.
Wiley Wiggins. Okay, maybe people don't know
And in fact, at the end of this film, I turned to our producer, Sprints, and I said, so, who's the breakout actor here this time? And she kind of looked at me and went, what do you mean? And we had the same discussion. So
Zoe Dutch.
Who's the breakout?
Zoe Dutch.
It would be Zoe Dutch. But I first want to start this with a question for Sarah.
Yes.
You like this movie.
I did.
But I know you like it less than a lot, which I'm actually in the same camp.
I like it a lot.
What took it away from being a top-level Linklater? I saw it was a 3 out of 4 stars, which is positive.
Yes.
Out of 3.5, why not a 4, I'm sure is a question you've been asked for a film that's gotten pretty much raves.
Yeah,
what held it back a little bit for you?
What held it back?
Why not? It's a good movie for you.
Why not great? It's almost a great film.
Why not great?
Because it has virtually no female characters whatsoever. And the one female character that it does have, it treats okay.
It does treat... She's okay. She has a scene a walk in the park kind
and
of
I
thing.
Get it. This movie is about this group of baseball players. It's about a group of dudes. It's 3 days before they start classes. It's how they get to know one another. It's how they become a team.
Creating bonds.
And anybody that's played on a competitive, successful team.
And you're a softball player yourself.
Sure, and I was a college athlete as well. And so I understand the dynamic here quite intimately. And I appreciate the fact that Linklater does spend so much time with these guys getting to know one another and forming these bonds, especially because they don't necessarily all get along and aren't all on the same page, which is the way it is with successful teams. They're not all going to be on the same page. They're not all going to like one another, but they all have to respect and admire one another when they get on the field. And so I'm okay with it being about a bunch of guys. But at the same time, one of the things that makes Dazed and Confused such a seminal film is that it brings in both the male and female perspectives. This movie doesn't. I mean, all of your female characters are basically named Sorority Girl Number 2 or Mud Wrestling Girl
We have an actual mud wrestling scene, no sarcasm.
This is a distinctly polarizing film in the fact that it really is only focusing on the male perspective here.
Cute co-ed number one. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the cast listing for these characters.
Do you think the male characters are especially interesting? Because it's a Linklater movie in the classic sense of there is no plot. That's not at all a bash of the movie. Dazed and Confused doesn't really have a plot. But the characters... I feel like are more unique from one another. They have their own kind of small mini arcs. You know, I'm thinking of like Adam Goldberg admitting that he wants to become a dancer, Wiley Wiggins kind of having his first night out. You know, I understand this isn't as condensed, but it feels like the majority of the characters in this movie are Ben Affleck's Wooderson from Dazed and Confused, the kind of jackass macho guy who just like wants to do what he wants to do. And I feel like this movie doesn't have that quite that same balance that really differentiates the personalities, and with them all having the similar mustache.
But that's also the difference, I think, between high school and college, isn't it? I mean, you are looking at a movie like that is dealing with the last days of high school and Dazed and Confused, where you have a much broader subsection of kids all getting together because they're about to go their separate ways. Mm-hmm. Here, you're dealing with a college athlete, a successful high school athlete moving to college and just dealing specifically with how they relate to their fellow athletes.
Sure.
So as such, you're not going to have that broader cross-section to look at. And I do think these guys are interesting in that,
they're kind of all the same, though.
No, I mean, but the... Mm. I don't know if I would go there, and it does allow them all to have some very interesting college-level discussions that I think we all did when we were in school.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's calling this a spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused, I get it. It makes sense. But if anything, it's more of a sequel to Boyhood than it is to Dazed and Confused, because it does kind of feel like our main character from Boyhood, he could easily be Jake Bradford, our high school sports star, moving up into college. I mean, this movie almost starts where that movie ends.
And I would say this also, to me, I was hoping for something, the way they sell this in all the trailers and everything, they sell it as, this is going to be the rip-roaring comedy of the summer. And I didn't find, the comedy as sharp or as fast, as Brian, as you call it, the hit level or the laugh level or all that. I didn't find the humor coming as fast as I would have expected it to, based on specifically if you watched any of the marketing they had.
Marketing. Even compared to Dazed and Confused.
But the other thing I think about it is that this is Linklater, and it's all about marinating in all these scenes. None of the scenes, there is no real story arc here. I mean, very loosely based. We have a lot of little vignettes all put together, and that's what we're getting. So,
and that's kind of the point.
Yeah. So, I guess my takeaway from it is I compared this is the closest you will get to being with a bunch of guys from a locker room smelling, you know, the icy hot and not getting whipped by a towel.
The sweat socks.
You can smell, exactly. This is like hanging out with those guys. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but I thought that's kind of what this is. And I think for that, Linklater has definitely achieved what he set out to do in that regard.
And I think there's plenty here to mull on. There's a lot that I've been thinking about afterwards. And I also will say, the lone female character that is in this movie, Zoe Dutch, and it's not so much Linklater's writing, it's her performance. She brings this character to life, and she's instantly memorable.
She has the best moment of the movie, which is when she realizes a date is going to be coming out of nowhere all of a sudden, and her getting ready
in a hurry is
quite great.
So where do we sit on it, Brian?
Actually, just a rent. I think it's a fine movie. I liked it, but I didn't love it by any means.
Okay. I still think it's a good film. Mm-hmm. Not Linklater at his best, but Linklater at his almost best is still better than just about everybody else. So I'm a theater. I mean, it's not like a strong go see it right away theater, but it's a theater.
Yep, and I'm with you on that too. Also thought was interesting, Kurt Russell's son, right?
Wyatt Russell.
Wyatt Russell.
Yep.
Kind of a fantastic character that I think was a fun, I wouldn't call it, it's not his breakout role because he's certainly done other things, but this is one I think he will be noted for.
Maybe. Of course. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Going a little more broad, I would say.
The movie that unseated Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice from the box office top spot.
Yeah.
Melissa McCarthy doing it once again.
Once more.
In The Boss, another relatively low-budget comedy that she has turned into a hit pretty much on the strength of her own charisma.
Huh.
We talk about there not being movie stars anymore, and it seems like she is one of the exceptions to the rule. Maybe it's because she's not getting these big-budget movies, but her comedies have come out, and they've been varying in quality.
Every movie that she has starred in, I mean, it has been the actual top-of-the-line star.
Absolutely.
We're talking Bridesmaids. That was still an ensemble.
But you've got The Heat. You've got Identity Thief.
Identity Thief, Spy.
Even Tammy.
Yep. All of them have opened at over $20 million some over 30 million.
Hmm.
And you have to start thinking it's because of her.
Mm-hmm. So what is the plot?
The boss concerns itself with a... So Melissa McCarthy plays Michelle Darnell. She's the 47th wealthiest woman in the world, or in the United States, sorry. She's sort of a mixture of Martha Stewart and Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And her arch nemesis, Ronaldo,
Peter Dinklage.
Played by Peter Dinklage, rats on her to the SEC. And so she ends up having to go to prison for 6 months. And when she comes back out, she has nothing.
Hmm.
And so she shacks up with her former assistant, Claire, played by Kristen Bell, and comes up with this idea to sell Claire's amazing brownies while also starting a Girl Scout-like troop of girls
with
called
some
Darnell's Darlings
elements.
With little fascist overtones to go out and sell these brownies for her. And that's basically the movie. It's her trying to get her wealth back, get her mojo back, but also discovering that she needs a family.
It's kind of a
and
modern,
she needs to learn how to love.
Yeah, it's kind of a modern, more profane Troop Beverly Hills.
Basically, that's a great comparison. it's Troop Beverly Hills meets Big Business.
With more F words.
With a lot more F words and also...
Not nearly as good as either of those,
to
be honest.
And 10 to 13-year-old girls engaging in an all-out street brawl.
Did you find this funny?
I found elements of it funny.
What uh-huh. did you find funny?
Melissa McCarthy is always going to be... She's gonna make you laugh every now and then. And some of her verbal assaults on people, you cannot help but start laughing at them.
Right.
It's also a great reminder that Kristen Bell is remarkably talented.
Hmm.
And she gets a good chance to sort of make an interesting character that unfortunately never takes off as far as it should. But Kristen Bell, because she's so good... manages to at least leave an imprint that's positive.
Brian,
I feel like
you're hemming and hawing.
Okay, so here's the
here.
Thing with Kristen Bell. No, nothing against Frozen. I'm not counting that for or against her. You know, I'm a fan of her work in that film.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like with Kristen Bell, Sarah, you've watched and I assume loved Veronica Mars.
Veronica
the TV
Mars
show.
Is a great television
I'm wondering
show.
If Kristen Bell is Sarah Michelle Gellar, where she had, if you watched Buffy, you know Sarah Michelle Gellar is a very talented actors who can do drama and comedy.
Who
if you
never
watch
gets that
anything
chance.
Else, you don't think that. And having never watched Veronica Mars, I see Kristen Bell in this. And she's fine. She does the kind of warm, motherly role. She's fine. But I've never seen her in any movie where I thought she was more than that.
Hmm.
So she's okay in this movie. And Melissa McCarthy does some funny stuff. I think we're basically on the same page. The hit ratios we were discussing for Everybody Wants Some, it's very low on this movie. And it steals a couple... pretty big one-liners here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, Peter Dinklage is doing this weird, like, pseudo-Zoolander impression
and
kind of thing.
And I didn't, as much as I didn't care for Pixels, Peter mm-hmm. Dinklage was one of the best things in Pixels. He's really bad here.
Yeah.
He doesn't really get anything interesting to do. Plus, he's bad. It's the first time I've watched him in a movie where I honestly want to say he isn't good.
Yeah. Hmm. And the first act of this movie stinks.
Yeah.
The last act stinks.
So what's the good part?
The middle chunk where it's basically her starting up this little regime of the worst, not even going for the worst girls in schools, but accepting that maybe the worst girls in school are going to come towards her, the bullies, the tall girl, the weird people,
mm-hmm.
bringing them all in like the little Pied Piper she is and unleashing them on the other little brownies and Girl Scouts. That has some funny bits, and then it has to bring back some drama. It wants to do some heart, kind of like Identity Thief did.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like here's a movie. You have to have a turn at some point because things are good. Let's go down that direction, and you know where this is going to end up in the end. And
so
it's pretty boring.
This is the second film that McCarthy has made with her husband, Ben Falcone.
Mm-hmm. Tammy
the other
being
was
the first.
Tammy.
Yep.
Both these movies are films that I respect for their darkness, for their refusal to iron out the crueler, nastier edges of their main characters.
Sure.
That doesn't make them good movies. I respect the attempt to do something different with these comedies, but I haven't enjoyed them.
I think that's fair.
Hmm. Hmm. And having not seen it, I have no opinion.
I know. There I know you have not seen it.
So, I still do love the fact, though, that it unseated a superhero movie at the box office. That makes me quite tickled.
So ultimately, Sarah, where do you sit on it? Basically,
it's a skip. I mean, there's interesting things in it, but it's a skip.
Okay. And Brian?
I'm a skip as well.
Wow. Okay. Two skips on The Boss. Not entirely surprising, basically, and from just my overall perception.
The thing
of
with
the
McCarthy
film.
Is she has kind of the Will Ferrell thing. And I know not everyone here is necessarily a Will Ferrell fan, but he seems to work great. Adam McKay brings out, if you like him, the best, you know, your Anchorman, your Step Brothers. Mm-hmm. McCarthy working with Paul Feig has done Spy, Bridesmaids, The Heat, which I think are pretty unequivocally her best three movies, at least where she's got a prominent role.
Other than St. Vincent, which she's a supporting
I would say
in.
This is better than St. Vincent, though, personally. The Boss, but I mean those, the Paul Feig films. I just think those are, when you're, she's going for the big comedies, mm-hmm. Paul Feig brings the best out. If it doesn't have Feig, ignore. Ignore.
Interesting.
It is also interesting that you bring up Will Ferrell, because Will Ferrell and Adam McKay produced this film, and it feels a lot like the worst of what they've done together.
Yeah. Huh. Well.
Oh, well. Speaking of comedies.
Another comedy for us. Let's talk a little bit about Barbershop, The Next Cut. Did you guys follow Barbershop 1?
I've seen one.
Okay.
I didn't see two. I did see the spinoff Beauty Shop.
Okay, so
I've seen that too.
What do you remember of Barbershops 1 and 2? What was the overlying theme in that?
Community.
Community.
Community and family.
Right.
And which is, and the thing about the two Barbershop movies and Beauty Shop is mm-hmm. they're surprisingly good.
Yeah.
I mean, they bring together a lot of underrated ethnic actors. They put them in one location and they talk about real things in a real way. There's some stuff in there that doesn't work. There's some mm-hmm. stuff that's a little sitcom-y. Yeah. But overall, all three of those films work and yeah. they're emotionally effective.
And why? What happened?
Well, that's again what we continue with here in this. It's not a question of saving the barbershop at this point. It's a question of saving the community, because they're seeing gang violence on the rise and they want to do something to stop this gang violence. Therefore,
I've seen Chirac. I know where this is going.
And this was actually a comparison that was made.
Okay.
Tim Hall was at the screening with me the other day.
And hater of Chirac.
And he did not the like hater. Chirac. But we had interesting discussion about this, and I'm not going to speak for Tim on this, but I am going to dare say that I think Chirac actually handles gang violence better than the way Barbershop, unfortunately, handles gang violence. Because what we're dealing with here is a community that's trying to band together to put an end to gang violence. Again, we're joined by Ice Cube, Regina Hall.
Cedric the Entertainer,
Entertainer's in there.
Everybody's in this
Nicki
movie.
Minaj, Common. So, I mean, we see a lot of the same players we've seen before. So it's a barbershop, and we're hanging out in a barbershop and all the discussions thereunto. This one directed by Malcolm Lee and writers Kenya Barris and Tracy Oliver and another folk in there. So you got a whole bunch of folks. Oh, Sarah, turn the cell phone off.
Come on.
We're recording. Tell it to wait.
Some decency.
So you've got this whole mix. The general take on it, it's fun to hang out with these people. It's fun to hear their discussion. Their solution to gang violence really seems, shall we say, short-sighted. And
no haircuts.
Well, no, actually, that's the thing. They give away. Spoiler: they're doing free haircuts if you will maintain kind of a drawdown. If everyone a ceasefire. If they have this ceasefire, they'll give out these free haircuts for a weekend, and that's going to solve the problems and it's going to band the community together. Meanwhile, there are other little subplots going on here. It played okay, but I think there was just a big sigh for me at the end of it all. Really, it just didn't stick as much, and it's popcorn. It's in one, out the other. And,
didn't hold up in comparison to the other two.
Yeah, I think the other two, I really enjoyed hanging out with the gang a little bit more, and could laugh and maybe recite a few jokes. This is not necessarily the same. So
that's too bad.
So I don't think it quite holds as much.
Theater rent skip.
I'm going to say this is a skip on this one, unfortunately.
Whoa, skip! I thought you were going straight rent.
No, I'm just going to say that's a skip. You know, there you go. The one thing I will say is you do get plenty of Nicki Minaj twerking. And, you know, there are
that's
some...
That's what YouTube is for.
That's exactly so. So,
well, gosh.
Yeah, that being the case, Sarah, let's follow this up with Criminal.
So also opening this week, the new Kevin Costner thriller, Criminal. Mm-hmm. So if I go into the plot on this, it's going to take me like three podcasts.
Oh, geez.
So I'm just going to keep this really simple. Kevin Costner is a criminal who's in prison, whose frontal lobe does not work.
But isn't that where the criminal activity takes place?
I have no idea.
The frontal lobe is the higher level thinking.
No.
That was a little walk-in-y almost.
So.
the frontal lobe?
Actually, so the frontal lobe, it's the reason he's a bad guy is because that's where, you know, his empathy is. That's where his his basically he has no ability to create emotions.
Okay.
Which makes him a completely amoral character.
Ah, so his higher level thinking. Okay, I get it.
You got it now.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
A CIA agent in London dies.
Mm-hmm. Who is a CIA agent?
The CIA agent is Ryan Reynolds in cameo.
So we're moving Ryan Reynolds' right brain somewhere else?
Yes.
Is this another brain switch
Gary,
movie?
So his boss, Gary Oldman, has scientist Tommy Lee Jones insert Ryan Reynolds' memories into Kevin Costner's frontal lobe.
It's like the change up.
Wow. It's like, Face Off, but with a brain.
So imagine that the
brain
movie
off.
Is sort of a combination of Face Off meets...
what was that Ben Kingsley Ryan Reynolds movie?
I was going to say, the Ben Kingsley Ryan Reynolds movie from last year, Selfless, or if you remember the Anthony Hopkins, Emilio Estevez 90s movie, Free Jack. Yeah. It's sort of a combination of all three of those.
And it's the hit new comedy.
But in a Bourne Identity sort of way.
Okay.
The idea is you put these memories into Costner's head, you fix his frontal lobe, he's going to start caring, he's going to start getting emotions, and, of course, he's going to save the day.
What are these feelings?
So the threat going on is there's this hacker who has managed to infiltrate the U.S. Nuclear missile system, and there's a very, 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 very bad guy played by Jordy Mola who wants to get his hands on it. We have to find the hacker, get his
technology.
Who's going to
find the hacker? How do we find this hacker?
Well, I mean, so Costner's going to remember Ryan Reynolds' memories, and he's going to go find him.
Nice.
The movie is directed by Ariel Verman, who made The Iceman from a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It is written by Douglas Cook and David Weisberg, who thought up The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very high-concept film directed by sort of a very steady filmmaker. This is a movie I respect and really like elements of, but I don't enjoy the movie at all. So here's the problem.
I love it.
Okay.
The film takes itself so seriously that it doesn't realize how stupid it is. And so all of the stuff that is silly and comic booky and over the top and sort of James Bondish from the 1980s is so unrelentingly idiotic that you can't take anything that happens in the film seriously. On the flip side, you have to respect the film in the fact that Costner's character, Jericho Stewart, remains true to himself throughout the entire film. He is an awful human being.
Even with the implanted brain?
He has never learned to care about anyone, so he doesn't know how to do it. So he has no ability to understand that throwing a person into a burning car so that you can make your getaway might not be a good thing.
No.
And this is just a random bystander.
Bad customer.
He asks somebody for a gun at a certain point because they're being under assault, and they, of course, think to themselves, well, gosh, if I don't give this person a gun, we're all going to die. He shoots them first before taking on all the other bad guys. Costner plays this character right down the line. I mean, he does not smooth any of the edges. This is an amoral, horrible human being. And I love that, and I appreciate that. And the only person he ends up caring about are Ryan Reynolds' widowed wife and their young daughter. And it works. That actually works. But the spy versus spy, let's find the hacker, let's stop, nuclear missiles flying all over the place, let's make sure Jordy Mola doesn't get his hands on this technology, let's keep Gary Oldman happy,
Gary Oldman in this?
Gary Oldman is the world's stupidest CIA station chief in history.
Why would he take this gig then?
Money.
No, he's one of those characters that, Sarah, you and I love Gary Oldman.
Sure, and he's fine in the film. Tommy Lee Jones is fine in the film, but they're both here to pick up paychecks.
What a letdown.
I mean, the movie is continually at war with itself in that it's so unbalanced that it's impossible to enjoy as a silly little thriller because it takes itself way too seriously. But you can't enjoy it as a really dark drama about, about discovering your own inner self because all of the other stuff is just so unrelentingly stupid. Costner's terrific. There's a couple great action sequences that are staged in the middle of the film. But as an overall piece of pop entertainment, it just doesn't work, unfortunately. And if anything, that makes it more disappointing because you can see how it potentially could have. There's a great film lurking in this movie. It never comes to pass.
So does this qualify as even a rental?
For some, I think it would be. I'm going to end up sadly because this is a movie when I came out of the theater, I was thinking it was a strong rental.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've had 5 days to think on it, it's become a skip.
Oh, bummer.
What will it be next week? Stay tuned.
Exactly. All right. So Criminal comes in as a skip. But you, I want to be like you. Tell me, Brian, what is this film that I'm
the jungle,
aping
the
right
jungle,
now?
Aping.
Get
Hi-oh!
It?
Oh! How can I bear it?
Yeah, right? Tell us about this
Panther
Wonder
something.
Jungle Book.
So the Jungle Book is Disney's latest, I'm taking your money.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your money. We have your Star Wars. We have your comic book characters. We have your childhood cartoons you loved. But we're not going to re-release them like they did the old days.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to remake them.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. Like last year's Cinderella, which I know Sarah was a particular fan of.
Made my top 10.
So this is a remake, kind of reworking, readaptation of Kipling's famous Jungle Book, you know, which had its variety of stories in it, like Rikki Tikki Tavi, but most notably, I think, for modern audiences is Mowgli, the man cub who was famously lost or abandoned or, you know, hidden away in the jungle, who is raised by wolves, raised by panthers, raised by bears, oh my, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Animals that would actually never all be in a jungle together.
Sure,
but,
sure, yes.
But not split.
We're not going for realism here. You know, he can the man can understand the animals, but it's live action in the sense that, as Sarah famously laughed last night, filmed in Los Angeles.
Right.
You know,
filmed
it
on
is
location.
On location.
It's filmed on location. It's all CG. So saying like they're filming them with animals is kind of a lark, and saying it's live action is kind of a lark in its own way, but that's what it's supposed to be. It's going for realistic versions of the tigers. You know, Blue looks like a real bear. Mm-hmm. Bagheera looks like a real panther. And it's going for...
The wolves smell like real
wolves. The wolves smell like
the
real wolves.
The snozzberries are like real snozzberries.
Real snozzberries, baby. Real snozzberries, baby. And it's the story you know. It's Mowgli and Shere Khan, basically. So Mowgli's raised by the wolves. Everyone's getting along. And Shere Khan goes, I don't like this guy.
Uh-huh.
I don't like this cub. I don't like man.
Yeah.
I don't like man in my jungle.
Man and their red flower.
And he's basically like,
to go.
We
got
to get rid of him. And then, you know, Mowgli has to run for it. He befriends some animals, and... That stuff ensues.
Has a brief run-in with Scarlett Johansson monstrous python.
Trust in her.
Trust in me.
Which, as I recall from the animated Disney, had a larger role than what we're dealing with now in this film.
But
this we get.
Here's how. But this is. I mean, this is why this movie's good, though, in that it takes elements from – it is more of a remake of the 1967 animated film than it is a reworking of the actual Kipling story.
For sure.
But at the same time, they don't just redo it. They do take elements of both the Kipling story plus Disney's own 1994 live-action remake directed by Stephen Sommers. They take elements from all three and put them into this movie.
Yeah.
It's not – the reworking that you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
They do a lot of different things with it that keep it interesting, that keep you at least on your toes a little bit, even though they are getting to the same place as all of those other versions do.
So who are the voices that we want to be listening for in throughout this?
Well, there's some ones that you might recognize faintly. Your Ben Kingsley, your Idris Elba's, but I mean the most... The ones that would probably stick out the most are going to be Bill Murray as Baloo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Christopher Walken.
Of course.
King Louie.
And one of those I think works better than the other.
Yeah.
Bill Murray. I think Bill Murray actually is quite fantastic as Baloo.
Bill kills it. He's great.
The King Louie sequence just doesn't work.
But why didn't it work for you? Because I have my own issue with it. And I will go out on the fence and say Walken is one of my favorite all-time character actors from Verona, New Jersey, of all time. Sarah, go.
Well, I love the setup.
Magic.
They bring, so when he's going into the Monkey Temple and they introduce the character, Walken is doing this whole Marlon Brando Apocalypse Now thing
right.
that is kind of genius.
Yeah.
here's where trying to be faithful to the animated film doesn't work. When they work in bare necessities for Baloo, it's actually organic to the film, and it makes sense, and it works, and it's a nice moment. When King Louis sings his song about man's red flower, suddenly it turns into a Broadway musical, it just doesn't work. It's silly. And then the whole action sequence that follows it is just a lot of visual razzle-dazzle for the sake of visual razzle-dazzle in a movie that is filled with astonishing visual razzle-dazzle that doesn't need any more of it.
Yeah, see, and my take on it was I actually enjoyed a lot of Walken. The hardest part for me with Walken, though, was that it was hard for me to separate the man from the animal or actually let the man melt into the animal. I saw too much Walken, and it didn't allow me to enjoy the character as much because I was seeing how he was doing his phrasing.
You're both
crazy. All right. So what did
this movie's goddamn magical. I love this movie.
I mean,
loved.
Yeah.
This movie. This is.
I like this movie a hell of a lot. So.
Directed by Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau.
I think this is Jon Favreau's best film as a
director. This is Favreau meshing the different things he's done. So Favreau did Elf, which I know you're not as big a fan of.
I don't know where you're at.
I love Elf, but. Elf and Chef, which I think are personally his two best films, which I think the thing that works best for him is he is a earnest filmmaker.
He also did the small thing called Iron Man, which we should probably throw out there.
He did do Iron Man, which is where I think the spectacle comes in. I think he has a handling for, you know, the big scale, that kind of stuff.
Wasn't
but I don't
behind
think
Cowboys and Aliens.
He did do, which is not a good movie.
But it's not a bad movie.
It's not a good movie. Well, we can agree on it. But I think this manages that kind of simplicity of emotion that like Chef has. Earnestness is something that can easily spoil, you know, and I think Spielberg is a director that, you know, can do that and doesn't get laughed at. I think this movie handles that superbly. It just, you catch the awe, you catch the simplicity of the emotions, like Mowgli's mother wanting him to be part of the pack but understanding that he's different. You know, Baloo's burgeoning relationship with Mowgli, and at the point where he realizes maybe it's unsafe for him to stay around. Like, you gotta go. And the way he makes him go is heartbreaking. You know, I laughed, I cried, I did all that stuff. I loved this movie. It reminded me, honestly, and this is probably overpraised, that's just how it's gonna be with this movie in me, probably. It reminded me of Studio Ghibli. It reminded me of Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind, and to some extent, Princess Mononoke. It's a movie that's
that's high praise.
It feels like a live action version of those. You know, maybe not quite on that level at times, but also like the jungle is what it is. There's a respect for the animals. I think the way that they treat like the elephants. You know, there's this respect of nature, but also fear of nature. You know, that there's a whole community. There's a circle of life, and it moves us all.
Can we just say, speaking of the elephants,
love the elephants.
All three of the elephant sequences in this film are fantastic.
Yeah, phenomenal. Really pretty sharp.
Really amazing.
I think it's beautifully sharp. I think Shere Khan is genuinely
terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, Idris Elba is one of the, I mean, he's going to go down as one of the best villains of this entire year, without a doubt.
For sure.
If there was an award for vocal performance, he would deserve it.
And
I
love that King Louis. I love the King Louis sequence. I'm not saying the Walken stuff is seamless in the way I think the Bill Murray stuff. I had this conversation before the movie about how I was a little worried about Murray and Walken. I think Murray more seamlessly falls into it. I think Walken fits the character so well. And I love the strange, and I have no idea why they did it other than for the visuals, which works. Here's an orangutan.
Yeah.
We're going to make him humongous.
Yeah.
You know, and it has some fun pop to that in the scenes, and you know, kind of reaching for everything, just knocking the crap out of everything.
Right. And unlike Sarah, I actually do like the singing that Walken does, because you got to remember he is a big song and dance man.
I just watched one more time where he's phenomenal in that as a song and dance man.
It's just my difficulty is separating or rather merging character and person. So
I just think that as an element, it's out of step with a lot of the other things that are in the film itself.
But so where do you sit on the film overall, though? I mean, because it's visually beautiful. It's, you know, it's everything.
It's a good film. Yeah, I mean, even with some minor reservations here and there, it's a very good film. It's a theater.
And Brian, how about you?
I was trying to figure this out. Yeah. I think it's the best American blockbuster I've seen in years. It's a total theater.
Okay, and I'm with you on that, too. I think this is a theater as well. Now, this is a film that was originally thought of for kids, right?
But sure.
There's some there's some scary stuff in there that maybe little audiences, young audience might find it a little much.
They can get over it. No, that's how all movies are. Gremlins had that.
Yes.
This is how, if you watch E.T. when the police come to raid everything and E.T. looks like he's going to die on the stretcher.
Exactly.
Whatever the little kid's name.
Let's talk about this for a second.
The 1967 animated version of this movie has a terrifying end sequence where Mowgli attacks Shere Khan with fire in the middle of a plane full of, you know, grain or whatever, tall grass. That sequence is terrifying. Yeah, and it's as good as anything Disney has ever created in any of their animated films. And it's still rated G, and it deserves to be rated G.
So did
and
it,
you would not hesitate 1 second to take a small kid to go see that.
Did it shape your impression of film overall, though, as a child?
That movie, it's one of them, sure.
Okay. What are some other films, though, that actually shaped your vision of film and
so this
all
will
of
show,
the above?
I'm a screwed up. I was a screwed up kid. Not really, but apparently I'm a screwed up adult. Maybe not really. The two movies, we're thinking of ideas for stuff that, what were the movies I loved most as a kid? Now it's more of like a Saturday morning cartoon comic book kind of guy.
So preteen.
Preteen really was still two rated R movies. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad. I really appreciate it.
Rambo?
Thanks, Phil Zitzelman and my dad, Phil Zitzelman.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
First is Monty Python and The Search for the Holy Grail. So I heard a lot of F-bombs, S-bombs, C-bombs. You know, if there's a bomb,
what?
It could be
I'm
37. Said.
I'm not old.
Brilliant. That movie basically created whatever I think of as my own self-sense of humor. It probably all came from that movie, and its broad, goofy sensibilities to its dark humor. Like, I'm not dead yet. I'm just old.
Right.
You
37,
know?
I'm not old.
So for comedy, that's it. And the other one I watched, so when I was a kid, I had two staples that I watched at every birthday party between myself, Jeff Drummond, and Richard Hecht. We always watched the same things. We watched Holy Grail, and we followed that up with Evil 2, Dead by Dawn, which my brother first told me about, scared the hell out of me. He's like, there's a scene where this guy's hand gets cut off, and then there's a chainsaw. I'm like, this, I'm never going to be able to sit through this movie. I'm like 10. I'm watching it in our house in Coronado, California, and just terrified. And then it happens, and I'm like, I love it.
It's almost like Saturday morning cartoons.
It is, but it still had that like freak me out factor that you kind of look for in like horror as a kid, but not with the same level of intensity as other things. It meshed it so well, and that's probably why I'm the weirdo I am right now.
Yeah. So, Sarah, how about you? What are some of the films
that shaped you? When I was a kid, there's lots of different movies that shaped me.
Absolutely.
When I was a kid, the Magic Lantern Theater in Spokane, they had, during the summer, they had this kid film series where they would bring back a bunch of older, quote-unquote, classics and try to get little ones to experience those for the first time.
And they
ranged all over the map, and I've written about this before. I mean, like, they ranged from everything from The Umbrellas of Cherbourg to, you know, The Neverending Story.
Yeah.
So it was a wide variety. But for the two that really stood out there were The Creature from the Black Lagoon, because they showed it in actual 3D, you know, the 3D of the time.
Yeah.
And so when that skeleton hand comes right out of the audience, and you're like 4, 5, 6 years old, that is the freakiest thing ever. And it just made my eyes pop out of my head. And I just knew that this was something that I just loved. Mm-hmm. But the other was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, watching it there.
Oh, sure.
That movie just blew me away as a little kid. But the other two that just sort of shaped me who I am are two that are celebrating the 30th anniversary, one of which is also an R-rated film, and that's James Cameron's Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that when I was a little kid. And
your parents let you see Aliens as a little kid?
You have to remember, my parents, what we did is, when I was little, we would go to the drive-in every weekend.
Sure.
Every weekend, we went to the drive-in. And it didn't matter what was playing. It could be Aliens, it could be Slumber Party Massacre, it could be Bambi. It didn't matter.
Oh my gosh.
We did this as a family.
Yeah.
And if I got scared or if I had problems or if I had questions, we would talk about it. And because it was at a drive-in, we could talk about it at that moment in the car while we were watching those films.
Okay.
So I had a very different cinematic experience in comparison to most people.
Yeah.
But The end of that movie, when Sigourney Weaver comes out and does the whole in the loader, get away from him.
Yeah.
That moment just, again, it just inspired me in ways that I knew that I had to live my life for myself and be my own person.
Yeah.
Watching her do that in that movie.
Uh-huh.
The other one is Labyrinth, which we've talked about many times on the show already,
yeah.
Especially when David Bowie died. But that movie was quintessential for me because it really helped me discover a lot about who I am and where I wanted to go.
Wow. And weren't you a big Labyrinth person?
I was a big Labyrinth fan, as a matter of fact.
Sleestaks?
That's Land of the Lost.
What are your guys? Yeah. You like?
But the films that come to my mind are two of the big ones, and there's really no surprise in this.
There's one elephant in the room that obviously shaped me as well that I'm sure Adam's about to mention.
So the first one, the first film that blew, I think, the collective minds of all children, besides Star Wars, was E.T. And for me, Sarah, are we on the same page with that?
We are, but I was going to go with Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back.
Okay,
so.
Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, yes, that was fantastic. That was changing neighborhoods where kids were all wanting to be, you know, Star Wars characters for Halloween. But E.T., I think to this day, was the one film that was so magic for me. It sparked my interest in the paranormal and, outer space and the concept of extraterrestrials. That whole concept, for me, was blown out of the water and just so amazing with E.T. that still lives on to me as one of those films that I will forever love. And when I hear the E.T. theme, you know, when they do, and that initial flight, that could invoke tears. It's an emotional response. And way to go.
You ever do that Universal Studios thing?
Yeah, that's not so much. But
what's the other
one? The other one sits with me was just a couple years later, Ghostbusters. And that film, again, it holds water to this day in my mind. I mean, these are bigger films. These weren't like the boutique films, shall we say. But Ghostbusters, to me, was one of those things, again, that sparked the paranormal, that scared me out of my pants when we get within the first 3 minutes of the film. And, I remember having to hide behind the seats and my dad pulling me up as a little kid. I was just like, oh, my God, that was so scary. And he's like, settle down. You know, but it was that kind of emotion where you get so involved and it sucked me in. Fell in love with it right there.
Adam.
And that was Bill Murray.
Are you a god?
Ray, if someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes. So, Zool. There's only Zool. It was just one of those magical films that still lives on. I can quote almost every line from it.
No love for Viggo?
Elmer Bernstein. Oh, no.
No. Viggo.
Elmer Bernstein's score throughout the whole thing is one that will live on in just... It blows my mind going back to watch that, to see how much of that entire film is scored. And films aren't made that way anymore. They just don't do it that way. And Elmer, not quite as rich. Oh. Trust me on this. Go back, watch. It is just... Still, I drop the pen. I go,
drop that pen.
Yeah, it's that one I just hold very, very dear to the heart.
Hey, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Absolutely. So that's kind of where I come from.
Hey, works for me.
Jungle Book will do this for kids now.
You think so?
I know, potentially could.
Jason Ross told in front of us his daughter.
Oh my gosh.
Loving every second of it and dancing through the credits.
Yeah, she was just
the
going
great
crazy.
Credits.
Oh, yeah.
The great credits.
The only reason the 3D has any value in this movie is the credits.
Yeah.
Other than that, don't see it in 3D.
Quite true. So, from the Squabblers, Jungle Book getting 3 theaters,
yes.
The Boss getting 2 skips. Everybody wants some. 2 in the theater and 1. Was that in the skip pile? Did I actually,
rent.
Oh, in the
no,
rent
yes,
pile.
I said rent.
Okay,
rent.
It's my pen marking here, my little hash mark is very close to the S. So 2 theater, 1 rent for Everybody Wants Some. Criminal getting a skip and Barbershop also getting a skip, unfortunately. So kind of a mixed bag. But this has been episode number 32. Brian, you working on anything real quick?
I just did my new masterpieces on The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
Which is really good. Everybody should go read it.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And I'm getting ready for the summer long spectacular Was I Nuts 1996 retrospective. More to come in the future.
Fantastic.
Nice.
Sarah, how about you?
There's a gimmick.
There's nothing to report right now, and it's for reasons I'd rather not talk about.
Okay. Well, we'll
thanks, Russia.
Yeah, thanks, Russia.
We'll leave it at that. But
whatever.
Fair enough. Yeah, exactly. A big middle finger to Russia, and there you go. Indeed. This has been episode 32, Cinema Squabble. You can check us out at cinemasquabble.com. Thanks much for taking a listen to us on Stitcher and iTunes, and as well as cinemasquabble.com. Brian Zitzelman, Sarah Michelle Fetters, Adam Gerke.
That's you.
We'll catch you next time.